Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, Episode 50, with Sarah Cornack and Bethann Schromberger. I can't believe we're at Episode 50. That feels like such a huge milestone for us. And I want to take this chance to thank all of our guests that have come on our show and agreed to talk with us. They've all been so knowledgeable and so helpful, and it's been a blast getting to learn from each and every one of the people that we have been fortunate enough to interview. So thank you so much. Today on our show, we are so thrilled to welcome Amy Lynn Andrews. Amy shares some fantastic advice for us about blogging, ebooks, and guest posting. So let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today, we are so excited to welcome Amy Lynn Andrews to the podcast. Amy started blogging in 2004. As a struggling pastor's wife with two small children at the time, her blog was a much-needed outlet. In 2010, Amy started a site that has now become amylynandrews.com. She shares blogging tips and tutorials. Amy has become well known in the blogging community for her excellent, comprehensive, down-to-earth advice. Her email newsletter, called the Use Letter, is full of the best resources and tips on the web. Amy is married with four kids, and she and her husband both work part-time online while tag-teaming their kids' education. She's a couponing dropout and is admittedly terrible at crafting, cooking, and all domestic tasks that start with a C. She's the child of missionary parents and graduated high school in a class of 19 students in Africa. Amy now lives in Texas with her family and isn't quite sure how that happened. Welcome to the show, Amy. We've heard so many wonderful things about you, and we're just so excited to learn more from you today.
Thank you so much. It's so funny, isn't it, to hear your story being told by somebody else? But That was a great introduction.
Amy, we've heard from Bethann a little bit about you. Could you tell us in your own words a little bit more about yourself and your family and also your blog and business?
Sure. Let's see. Wow. Well, she covered a lot. So we have four kids, and they range in age from 14 to 6. So we are constantly busy trying to figure out how to, you know, make it all work and, you know, keep things, all the balls in the air or the plate spinning. We have been living in Texas for several years, and we've moved quite a bit before then. So blogging has been one of the things that's sort of stuck with me as we've moved from place to place. I started really getting into the internet in about probably the early 2000s, and I was hooked from the very beginning. I'm a total learner at heart, so I loved being able to find information on just about anything, right? And then I don't have to file any of it away. That was like the best part. I could just get on there and everything's contained in this little box in front of me. I loved it. So then basically what happened as far as blogging and how I started blogging was that one day I got this email from one of my cousins, and he had just started a nonprofit organization and built a website to go with it. So in his email, he was like, "Hey, check out my website." And I have to tell you, it totally blew my mind, because up until that point, I just sort of assumed you had to be a computer guru, you know, to know how to start your own site. But I knew that my cousin was not a guru. So I thought, wow, if he could do it, then surely I can too. So I look back to that moment as really the turning point for me. It was like I switched from seeing myself as a consumer of the internet to really a potential producer on the internet. And so that was like the thing that changed, and it sort of launched me into this new adventure. I have no computer background whatsoever, and so I was really surprised to find that I really enjoyed it. I completely threw myself into figuring out how to get things set up and stuff like that. And then and in my research, you know, how to start my own website, someone mentioned along the way that a blog was probably the easiest way to start. So that's really the beginning of my blogging journey.
I love going back to people's beginning stories. You know, it's so fun to see how far they've come. But related to your blog, what are some of the best ways that you've grown your audience?
Great question. And one that I think is asked so much, isn't it? I think a couple of things come to mind. One of the first things is that I have really worked hard at being generous and helpful with the information that I provide. And really this comes from doing unto others what's done to me, you know, because I pretty much started with absolutely nothing. I knew nothing. I didn't have any money to spend to speak of. And so it was really the generosity of others that taught me how to get started myself. So this is something I really enjoy. I love to help others figure it out themselves. So my goal has always been to sort of be the go-to person for those who want to start a blog or grow their blog but don't really have a technical background, like I didn't either. So I try to be as helpful as I possibly can. And I really think that has made a huge difference. Another thing is just being patient. And I think if you talk to any blogger who's been doing it for a while and who's making part-time, full-time income, they'll tell you, you've got to have a lot of patience. And really, it's not just kind of the learning curve about how to get started blogging, you know, the technical aspects of it, which you do have to have a lot of patience for that, but also to build solid relationships and a really solid reputation. It became clear to me from the beginning that, you know, if you're trustworthy, you know, people are going to stick with you. And building a reputation of trustworthiness, you just can't shortcut that. That would be definitely another thing. But my very top tip, and this is probably a little bit unconventional, you don't really hear this talked about very much, but when people ask me, so what do you think has been key in helping you get your business going the way that it has? I always say empathy. Without a doubt, my ability to be empathetic has really come in handy. I've always been a really deep feeler and somebody who's been really observant of other people and really interested in other people. And I just don't think that this quality is talked about very much. But for me, I would say hands down has been probably the thing that's been most useful for me in growing a successful business. To be able to put myself in my reader's shoes has just been absolutely essential. So I'm constantly asking myself, if I was on the other side of the screen, what would I want to know? Or would this make sense to me? Or does this feel too salesy? You know, are people going to get tired of, is this too much promotion? Or, you know, things like that. So I'd say empathy is my number one.
That's a great perspective on what has caused your blog to grow so well. And I'm sure you're right. You seem to focus a lot on helping others. And I must say your use letter is extremely helpful. Your tips are just fabulous in there. And they're not run of the mill. They're new and different. How did you come up with that idea? And how do you find such great content?
Well, I think in the last couple of years, I started seeing there was like this subtle shift in blogging. And back in the day, let's say, in quote unquote, the olden days of blogging, like what, 2005, I don't know, 2007, there was so much emphasis on traffic. And it was all about bloggers. We need to build traffic, build traffic, build traffic. Now, traffic is definitely still relevant, of course. But I started hear rumblings in the blogosphere that income, for example, from display ads in sidebars or headers or footers and other traffic dependent money making makers or money income streams was really decreasing. And then on top of that, I started seeing some sites being hit really hard by the algorithm changes from Google, you know, like Hummingbird and Panda and Penguin. And then, of course, we have Facebook, and they're constantly changing algorithms. And, you know, like, for example, Facebook, I mean, there's been some bloggers that have really, I mean, their traffic has taken a nosedive because of Facebook changes. So, you know, as people are losing traffic, they are obviously losing income as well when they are focusing, when, you know, when their income streams are mostly traffic dependent. So some people came out just fine. Came, you know, through all the changes just fine, but it really made me start to realize the importance of maintaining as much control as I possibly could and owning as much as I could and not being dependent on other sites like Google or Facebook or whoever else, other social media platforms or anybody else to send people my way. So it was at that point that I knew I wanted to take some of my eggs out of the traffic basket. And then this was also around the time we started to hear more and more about the importance of building a list. And I think it was Seth Godin who talked about the concept of permission-based marketing, which is, you know, you getting permission from others to go to them instead of waiting for them to come to you. So with an email list, of course, you are getting permission from others to show up, in, you know, to decide when you wanted to pop up in their inbox, as opposed to waiting for people to kind of find you through Google or, you know, whatever. And the concept of permission-based marketing really made sense to me. So that's when I decided I wanted to change my focus from building traffic to my blog to building an email list, just simply because I knew a list was more concrete and more, it was a more controllable digital asset for me. And then once I decided to go in that direction, I knew that I needed to make my email super valuable because, of course, you know, everybody's, you know, anybody who gets annoyed will unsubscribe. And now it's getting easier and easier for people to unsubscribe. You know, Google just made, and now Google is automatically putting an unsubscribe link in at the tops of all emails and stuff. So I knew that I needed to make sure that the content in my emails was really valuable. So I decided to leverage the reputation I had already built on my blog, which was the provider of super helpful tips and trustworthy content. And that's when I came up with the idea of sharing quick, you know, the bite-sized tips. And then I called it the newsletter, you know, play on the word newsletter, the newsletter, and, you know, just the idea that they were tips that you could use.
I love it. And I know you're obviously reading all the time. I just read a blog post of yours where you talk about how much you enjoy just scouring the internet for the best advice and all of that. But do you have any specific tips or strategies you use to really quickly weed out all of the best content? Because I'm just so impressed with the newsletter, with the unique tips and resources that you list every single week.
I do read a lot. So the newsletter is, I have to admit, the newsletter is a little bit, it gives me an excuse to feed my reading addiction because I can, you know, I can read and read and read and then just go, oh, well, I'll just put it in the newsletter and it makes, you know, it makes it worth it. So I use Feedly to keep track of the blogs that I follow. I try to organize them according to the main topics that I typically share on my in the newsletter. Recently, I did a post that kind of outlines my editorial calendar for the newsletter. And across the top, I just list all of the main topics. And then I try to hit about four of those topics each week. And I just switch on and off. So then in my Feedly reader, all the blogs that I read are sort of mostly organized according to those topics. As I'm reading through Feedly, I just go super quick. And if something catches my eye that I think might have a tip, it's just a lot of mental filtering because I've got to know what my readers are going to read. I've got to make sure that I'm providing tips that aren't just interesting to me, but might be interesting to them or that are interesting to them. And then if I see something that I think would make a great tip, I'll just highlight it or write a quick comment about it, send it to Evernote. And then in Evernote, I have the same categories that are all they're all tags, and then I'll just tag the note. And then when I'm putting a newsletter together, I see which tips I need to fill in to flesh it out. And then I'll just grab them from Evernote.
That's a great idea. I personally love Evernote too, just for stockpiling all of the best advice and also storing all of my ideas so they don't drive me crazy or drive Sarah crazy.
Is your decision to focus on subscribers, is that why you have set up the landing page of your blog to be focused primarily on the newsletter? It has such a different look when you type in amylynandrews.com. Your website looks so different than most others. It's very focused on that newsletter. I assume that was all intentional?
Yes, my homepage is intentional. I decided to just try it, really experiment with it for the time being, to see if I could really make the subscription form stand out front and center. So I haven't really decided whether or not I'm going to keep it that way, mostly because at this point, I've noticed that when I go to my own site and I'm trying to look up a post, I kind of get frustrated with my own site. And I think to myself, wait, I'm just trying to get to the search bar, but now I've got to click through. So I might change it. But for now, that was kind of the goal, was to make that sign up form as prominent as possible.
Now, Amy, this question you don't have to answer if you don't want to. I'm just really curious, and we'll cut this if you don't want it. But I'm curious to know, if you don't mind sharing, how many subscribers do you have for the newsletter? And please don't feel bad. You can say, no, that's insider info. That's fine.
Oh, no. Generally, I don't feel. I mean, I guess some things I don't talk about just talk about, but no, that's fine. I think I'm approaching about 11,000 at this point, but really I delete subscribers on a regular basis, and I'm focused more on what like my open rate and engagement rates are. So that's the number that I'm really interested in. And so I try to keep it at about 40%, between 35 to 40% is my goal as far as engagement rates. Or open rates.
Okay, that's good to know. And I think that's a great point too, that the numbers don't matter as much as really having those engaged readers and an engaged audience.
Yes, I think that is one thing that a lot of people are interested in, you know, kind of like the general overall numbers, but I think you've really got to be focused on which numbers make the most sense to you. So if, for example, if I would ever get sponsors, let's say, for the newsletter, I think as an advertiser, I'd be much more interested in knowing the open rate than I would, you know, just the number of subscribers. So general statistics vary, but in general, I think what I've researched and found is that for email newsletters, to an average open rate, I think it depends on the industry, but an average open rate is somewhere around 12%, let's say, give or take. So, you know, if you've got somewhere between 10 or 15%, you know, it's probably average. If your open rate is lower than that, it's, you know, below average. And then obviously as you go up from there, it's greater and greater. So I tend to hover around 35%, and I'm constantly trying to push it up to 40. So sometimes I get up there and sometimes I kind of stop in the middle. Sometimes I go down to 30 or whatever. But you have to remember too, getting rid of unengaged subscribers actually increases your open rate. So deleting subscribers is a great thing. Not only for your open rate, but also because then you pay less, right? If you don't have a free service, if you're paying for an email service, if you've got fewer subscribers, you don't pay. So there's no reason to pay for unengaged subscribers.
That's a great point that I think a lot of people miss out on. And I have to say, Amy, after hearing your open rates, I'm pretty excited. Our email list is teeny tiny right now. So I think that's the only reason why we are able to have like high open rates, but I'm sure it will majorly drop. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I don't know. But
no, you shouldn't say that. Well, good. Yeah, well, that is great. That's awesome. Yeah, it's just, it's just a matter of being consistent. I think just providing consistently good content and just really focusing in on that and making sure that the people that are reading you know what to expect and look forward to what you're sending out.
Amy, I had the chance to read your book, Tell Your Time, How to Manage Your Schedule So You Can Live Free. I read it a couple of years ago and found it to be very helpful. What inspired you to write that ebook?
Well, do you want the truth or do you want...
I want the lie.
Want what sounds good.
Yeah, we definitely want the lie. No.
We don't like truth on this podcast.
Oh, well, what happened is I was working as a virtual assistant at the time. I had sort of just pounded out kind of my time management strategy in the way that it makes sense in my brain. And I had sent it to Crystal Payne of Money Saving Mom. And she was like, wow, this makes so much sense. You should turn it into an ebook. Well, I'm not going to say I'm not a writer. I'm going to say writing is not my first love. So the thought of ever writing a book or an ebook or something like that just kind of never crossed my mind because it, I'm a math girl. So give me an algebra problem over a paper any day. So when she suggested writing an ebook, I thought, oh my goodness, no way, I'm not going to do that. But the more I thought about it, I thought, you know what? No, this is good because I would like to experiment with the whole ebook writing process and that sort of thing. So I needed content in order to be able to experience the ebook process. And this seemed like content that would work well. And that's really how it came together. I put it together with the intention of figuring out how the ebook process worked and then being able to pass that on to my readers. That's really kind of how it all happened.
So, Amy, speaking of your ebook on Amazon, I noticed that it has quite a lot of reviews on it. I think 167 last time I counted, which I thought was really great. Do you have any tips on how you were able to get so many people engaged in writing reviews and then just in general marketing that ebook?
I think I was fortunate in that I was sort of at the front end of the ebook wave, let's say, that kind of swept through the blogging world. Maybe not so much in the blogging world in general, but kind of the mom blogging world, let's say. So I think when I launched it, that was back in 2010. It was a little bit more of a novelty, and I know it's more difficult now. I know for sure. It's more difficult now to get reviews and to get eyeballs on your book when you launch an ebook these days because it's, there's just so many of them. I do think that is a great tip in and of itself, or maybe a two-part tip. Number one, when you start to see something happening, dive in and just learn as you go because if you wait and you think, well, I don't know how to do that. I need to, wait till somebody else can tell me how to do that. A lot of times you might miss the opportunity when it's at its peak. So for me, I think it was huge that I was sort of on the front end of that. As far as getting reviews and things, one thing I worked very, very hard at was to establish relationships with other bloggers to be my affiliates. And basically, if you sign up for my affiliate program, which is easy to do, and you refer anybody to the book that buys the book, then I'll give you 50% of the book price. I think that was something that really motivated people to promote the book for me. So I'm a huge believer in affiliate programs and to create your own affiliate programs for your own products. Because, yes, it's true that any book sales that I make through an affiliate, I only get 50% of the cut, but I have sold so many more ebooks than I could ever possibly think of selling on my own. So I owe a huge amount of that whole process and the success of that to my affiliates. As far as reviews on Amazon, this is trickier. I think that getting reviews is more difficult now, but I think it really starts with making sure that your content is solid. Don't just write an ebook just to say that you've written an ebook, but really make sure that you're offering something that's going to truly change somebody's life. Not that Tell Your Time changes anybody's life necessarily, but something that really solves a problem. If you solve a problem for somebody, they're going to be much more likely to pass it on to the people that they know.
What program did you use to set up your affiliate program?
For my ebook, I used eJunkie. At the time, it was a service that a lot of people were using anyway, so it was familiar to people. And I just walked people right through the process of signing up and what they needed to do and that sort of thing. So it is on eJunkie. Now, I know a lot of bloggers now are not using eJunkie. They've moved away from it. For me, it's worked just fine, and I don't have any plans, at least for Tell Your Time, I don't have any plans for taking it off of eJunkie.
Okay, so that's interesting. I didn't realize that you could just sign up for a service like eJunkie, and then they could assign those special affiliate links for each of your affiliates.
Yep, it's super easy.
Okay, that's great. You used eJunkie, so was that for the book being sold on your own website, or was that referring people still to the book on Amazon?
It was for selling it on my own website. So okay. There's two ways that you could get the book. You could get it in a PDF version, which is what I sell on my own website, and you can get it on Amazon. You can get it also on BarnesandNoble.com. And people can make money either way. If they wanted to refer people to Amazon to buy it, they would become an Amazon associate and use their Amazon associate link to refer people to the Amazon site, to the Tell Your Time product page on the Amazon site. They could do that, but they're not going to make as much money. I can't control how much Amazon gives affiliate, because that's Amazon's deal. They're going to get maybe 4 to 8%. But if they refer their readers to my website, which is where eJunkie comes in, if they refer people to my website and their readers buy it on directly from my site, then that's when they'll get 50% commission.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. And you can have your book in both places at the same time, right?
You can have your book in both places at the same time, but you must be careful. There are, let me see, two things that come to me off the top of my head. The first one is, Amazon has a program called KDP Select, which is something that you have to sign up to become a part of. And basically, when you are part of the KDP Select program, you are not allowed to sell your ebook anywhere else online. Now, the KDP Select program, it's kind of complicated, but let's just say, basically, Amazon says, okay, if you give us, you know, exclusivity to your book for 3 months, then we will give you some perks. And the main perk was, well, still is, the ability to offer your ebook for free for 5 days of that 3 month period, which a lot of ebook authors use to sort of boost visibility for their ebook. But again, that's only if you choose to become part of the KDP Select program, then you have to take your ebook off of sale wherever else it's on sale. If you don't do the KDP Select program, you can easily just be an ebook author that sells your book on Amazon, and then you're free to sell it anywhere else. But there is a caveat, which is you cannot, according to Amazon's terms of service, okay, let me just say, the last time I checked, and I'm pretty sure this is the way it still is, You are not allowed to offer your ebook digitally anywhere else online at a lower price than it is on Amazon. So, for example, right now, Tell Your Time is on Amazon for $2.99. I would be going against Amazon's terms of service if, for example, I offered it on my website for $1.99. Amazon's price has to be the lowest price. So it's either got to be $2.99 or above on my site, on Barnes & Noble, on anywhere else. One thing that I do see a number of authors doing, which is a mistake, is to offer their ebook as a freebie or a lead magnet. So sign up for my email list and I'll give you this for free kind of thing. Meanwhile, their ebook is on sale on Amazon, and that's not allowed. Does that make sense?
It does. And Amy, thank you so much for clarifying all of this. You're just a wealth of information. We have several women in our audience who I know are in the process of writing books or have already written one and are about to launch it in different places. And I think this is just so helpful to sift through the information.
Yeah, it's confusing and it's hard, but I would highly recommend, if you have any questions, you know, if you're about to launch an ebook or, you know, things like that, definitely contact their support. Usually you'll get an email back from them if you send their support department a question or whatever. But you have to be really careful. The other thing that Amazon will do, for example, if let's say my book is on BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com, and for some reason I put it on sale at Barnes & Noble for $1.99 or cheaper than $2.99, right? Because that's what it's being sold for at Amazon. If Barnes & Noble, the price on Barnes & Noble is lower, Amazon automatically figures that out and will lower your price on Amazon to match that. So Amazon, they know what they're doing over there.
they're pretty decent at business. I mean, no.
Yeah, but that is one thing that I've seen, you know, the whole, well, come to my webinar and I'll give you the free ebook. Meanwhile, it's on sale at Amazon. It's like, ooh, I hope they don't find out, you know, you could get in trouble.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's good for people to know, because as soon as you said that, I was thinking in the back of my mind, I can think of a few people off the top of my head where I've seen that happen. So that's really good to know.
We just found out that you used to be the gatekeeper of guest posts for Crystal Payne. We had no idea. So I'm assuming you have some great tips on how to get your guest post accepted. Could you walk us through some tips?
Sure. Crystal Payne has been great. I've really enjoyed not only what I've learned from her business-wise, but also her friendship. And she's a wealth of information. I worked for her for a time several years ago, and that was one of my tasks. And she gets a lot of requests for guest posts. So one of the first things I would tell people is make sure you read the blog you want to guest post on. It's amazing how many emails, well, not only that I got when I was working with her, but even that I get now, and I'm sure many, many bloggers get as well. You guys probably do too. You know, these emails that are clearly out of the blue, asking to guest post about, you know, maybe a topic that isn't even something that you talk about or whatever. So I would say first and foremost, make sure that you read the blog that you want to guest post on, and make sure you read it for a while to get a good feel for the type of audience and what kind of, you know, blog posts are written there, what people respond to, and just sort of the style, the overall style. If you send an email, and for me, if I ever got an email that was clearly oblivious, you know, I would just delete it, because I know they're just wanting link juice and they're not really concerned about providing value to my readers as the blog owner. So that should be a priority, is to provide absolute value to the readers of that particular blog. I would also say make sure that you read the guest post guidelines before you just send out an email. Chances are a lot of your questions will be answered in the guidelines, plus you'll also be a lot more likely to get your guest post accepted if it's obvious that you took the time to figure out what the blog owner is looking for. If you don't see the guest posting guidelines immediately, just use their search bar and look up guest post guidelines or something like that. If nothing comes up, the other good way of finding guidelines is to look at previous guest posts. And then, you know, a lot of times the blog owner will do a little blurb. This is a guest post from so-and-so. If you want a guest post, click here for more information, you know, something like that. If you can't find guidelines anywhere, then go ahead and email them, but just make the email super short. Like, I'd love to guest post for you. I think your readers might appreciate, the post that I have in mind for X, Y, or Z. Do you have guest post guidelines? And then just let them email back to you whether or not they were interested and or, you know, the guidelines they would like you to follow. So I think I wrote a post on, you know, how to get your guest post accepted, but some other just tips quickly would be to make sure your content is very high quality. Make sure that it is not published anywhere else online. This is a huge one because you don't want it to be a republished post either on your blog or someplace else. Also, don't republish the post. This happens sometimes, although not so much anymore, but sometimes people will post on their own blog, hey, I just guest posted this on so-and-so's blog. Don't do that. You know, you might give a few sentences. I guest posted on so-and-so's blog. Here's the first paragraph kind of thing, and then link back to the guest post where it is, you know, on the other site. Be very cautious about putting your own links in the body of your post. Some blog owners really dislike this. It's considered bad etiquette. Some people aren't so particular about that, but you have to be really careful. My theory is just don't put links to your own site in a guest post to be safe. Same thing goes for affiliate links. Like, I wouldn't put my affiliate links in a guest post to be posted on somebody else's blog. Now, sometimes a blog owner would say, yeah, go ahead, put your affiliate link in there. But I wouldn't do it unless you've given, you know, that they said that specifically. Of course, the exception to linking would be in your bio. You definitely want to make sure that your bio has a good link to your site. That maybe goes without saying. Those are the things that come to me quickly.
Great. Thank you so much.
One thing I've heard, I'm curious to get your feedback on this, Amy, is people have said in your bio that you can perhaps, the link that you include there, you could say, you know, if you head over here, I have this free, like a companion resource that you can grab that's like directly related to that article, but essentially then gets people to your email list, really, or, you know, takes them to a landing page on your site that's not like not a sales page or anything, but just like, hey, here's, you know, a guide to XYZ. But like, what are your thoughts on something like that?
That's a great question. I think,
I don't know if that still feels too salesy almost, or if you just want to link them to a related place on your website, but kind of leave it at that.
This is what I would do. When it comes to guest posting, my feeling is make it as valuable to their readers as possible. And you want to build a relationship with this blogger. So you don't want to leave any bad taste in their mouth. Or I wouldn't want anybody to feel like I'm trying to wiggle my way in. Now, a link in your bio is expected, and that's understood. And so I think you should take advantage of that. This is what I would do. Instead of saying, I have another resource here, what I would do is I would just make my bio as compelling as I could, but, you know, as natural as I could, not, hey, come over to my site. And then I would direct them not to my homepage, but I would direct them to the link in my bio, even though it would maybe be somewhat of a generic bio, the link in my bio, I would make land on a landing page specifically for that audience. And then on the landing page, what I would do is I would make sure that I, again, empathy, putting myself in these people's shoes, right? So this is a new audience for you. This is, these are new readers. Pretend that you are a tour guide and somebody that doesn't normally show up for your tour has just showed up. So you want to make sure that anything that you talked about in the post, in your guest post, will be highlighted for them when they get to the landing page that you've linked to in your bio. And so you're going to walk them through, you know, hey, thanks so much for coming from so-and-so's blog. If you liked that post, you're probably going to like these posts. I would list the posts on my own site that are closely related to the information that I just provided on the guest post. Then I would make sure that I made it very easy for them to get around because they might not know me, right? That's the goal for guest posting is that you're getting a new batch of readers. And then I would make sure that you would direct them to the places that you really want them to go. Everybody, every blogger, whether you're, it doesn't matter what you're doing, but every blogger should know what their number one goal is for visitors to their site. For me, for example, my number one goal is to get them on my newsletter mailing list. That's what I want. So I'm going to make that landing page direct them right to the newsletter mailing list. And I might, that might be putting a freebie on that landing page to, you know, that's related to the guest post so that they'll sign up for the newsletter. But maybe that's not what you want. Maybe your goal is to direct them to a product page on your site, in which case you're going to provide information that will gently lead them to the product page. When you write a guest post, the goal is to provide information. People are looking for information. To come across as salesy, to me, defeats purpose. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of people who probably disagree, and I know that there's a lot of people who think that I'm a little bit soft in my, let's say, calls to action or promotion of things, whatever. But I just learned from personal experience that if you prove that you're not in it to make a quick buck, you are there to provide things that are helpful for people. They are going to stick around for the long haul. And over the long term, that's going to pay off for you a lot more than one single sale. So I think everybody has to figure out what they feel most comfortable with and what works for them most. But in that case, I would make my bio somewhat general. I wouldn't do a huge, hey, visit my site for a freebie or something. I would probably just make sure that there was a really effective landing page on the other side of my link in my bio.
I love that idea, Amy. And I agree with you that I think oftentimes when you look at the blogging advice out there by the gurus or, you know, these online business experts, it is more sales oriented. And I think so as women bloggers or podcasters or, you know, whatever it is we're doing online, it's a totally different environment. And so oftentimes I do feel like when I visit those sites that are more male dominated, it's like they have that different perspective. But I'm totally with you where building that relationship over the long term is a much higher priority than making a quick sale or whatever. So I think that strategy is just perfect because, I mean, to be honest, it's really not a quote strategy. It's just, you know, you're being as helpful as possible. You're making sure those new visitors know what to do, know how to get around, and just providing them really great, great info.
Yeah, you really are. And, you know, I think we've all been on the other side of it too, kind of like you're saying, where you get sent to a place, you know, you're anticipating one thing, namely you're anticipating more information, and then you get there and you're like, oh, I get it. You know, like that kind of that sinking feeling, like, yeah. Oh, you know, oh, I have to give, you know, I have to pay money for it, or I have to whatever. And it starts to just feel, you know, you just don't see it very often anymore. As people are getting more and more and more savvy about online business, and as more and more people are really trying to do huge launches and, you know, stuff like that, it's tricky to figure out where the line is. And I know that I'm generally, I shy away from promotion, and I could grow in that area, but yeah, I rather be sort of behind in that way, because the other way just leaves me as a consumer, let's say, or as a reader, it just leaves me feeling like, you know, let down. And then I'm just like, I don't know if I am interested, and I click away. So it's tricky.
As we wrap up today, Amy, could you leave us with a funny or adorable mommy moment?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and I remember one of my sons, I have three boys, but one of them, when he was about 3 and a half, one day he says to me, "You're a genius, Mom." And I'm like, I am, you know, it was like this moment of, oh my goodness, he's going to say something about me. Yeah. You know, I'm like all ears, you know, I am. And he goes, uh-huh. Because you can do all the things I want. I'm like, oh, right.
That's more like genie in a bottle, not genius. Yeah.
Exactly.
It is cute, the little things, though, that get them, like, so excited. Like, they think when they're little, you know, they think you're the best ever just because you found them the last, you know, you gave them the last cookie or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was such a letdown. I was like, oh, wow. After three and a half years of my pain, sweat, and tears, finally you realized what I've sacrificed for you. I'm like, oh, it really is still all about you. Oh, that's okay.
Well, Amy, I know obviously your website is the perfect place for people to find you, but are there any other social media outlets where you'd love for people to connect with you?
Yeah, I'm pretty much on anything, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, Facebook, at Amy Lynn Andrews is my username for everything. So anywhere is great.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today, Amy. We certainly enjoyed learning from you, and I know our listeners are going to enjoy it as much as we did. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
What a great time we had talking with Amy. She really knows what she's talking about and is a wealth of information. If you missed anything that she said, just head on over to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/50 for the show notes from this episode. And as always, now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.